Hello, and welcome to episode 2 of Food for Thought, part of the Language and Food Class podcast. My name is Kayla Nick.
I'm Nicole Ryback.
I'm Hannah Song.
And I'm Kat Huang.
And today, we are going to be talking about some food labels and GMOs. So when we came up with this podcast, we were kind of thinking about, kind of in the context of our previous episode about how we don't really know a lot about what specific food labels mean, maybe. If you listened to the last episode, you know that I was very confused about different labels of eggs and cage-free and free-range and what every label on those eggs meant, and I was very confused about it. So this week we're talking about food labels and GMOs and kind of the regulations and meanings that go into those food labels and what that could mean for consumers. So to kind of just introduce GMOs, basically, the big overview is that GMOs stand for genetically modified organisms. And what that means is that you have a food product or a plant or some sort of, cows can also be like bred or modified or whatever. We're going to get into it. Are bred in some way or have their genetics changed or modified in some way, so that they are can offer increased yield. They can tolerate drought. They have enhanced nutrition or some other benefit. It usually has to do with insecticides or pesticides, and that will provide more products available to the market and to people to consume. From the FDA, they kind of connected GMOs to early farmers who used cross-pollination techniques to derive benefits into their crops. So the stance that the FDA is taking on this is that GMOs are just doing that faster, and they're just doing that process more specifically, because a lot of evolution is that slow change over time to make things more resistant to the environment around them. So GMOs is just doing that in a faster, more concise way. The most commonly modified organisms include corn and soybean and cotton, and the most common use of genetically modified organisms is to make them resistant to insects or herbicides and resistant to viruses, but there are other potential uses, even outside of food, which could be like vaccine development or transplant tissues, which is a fun thing that I saw. So that's the pro side. We also have the reverse side, which is the anti-GMO stance, which I don't know if you guys have seen the little food labels with the butterfly on them for the non-GMO project. So their main stance against it is that there is no evidence, so they say, that any of the GMOs currently on the market offer any of the touted benefits that they say they do. They also say that there's no long-term study on the safety of GMOs, and we don't know what the effects of them might be. In the U.S., some but not all GMOs products need to be labeled, and there's also concern about the novel organisms that have been created getting reintroduced into the environment and what effect that might have on the population. So with that, we kind of have our two-sided debate going into food labels and GMOs. Yeah, so I think, Hannah, you're going to kick us off then.
Yeah, so like Kayla said, GMOs have had a pretty like controversial history. I think from the perspective of the consumer, it can be, at least in the U.S., most of our foods don't need to be labeled with like a GMO or like contains GMO stickers. And I think from the side of the consumer, it can seem a little scary when it does show up. But in like different countries, there's actually very different regulations on like how products need to show how products need to like label their packaging. And kind of the process of like how these regulations were put in place have like influenced a lot of like how we think about GMOs and how they're like perceived by the public. So how this all kind of started is the U.S. was the first country to ever export a genetically modified product. So in 1996, the U.S. exported a tomato puree from California to Europe, and it got really, really popular in Britain. Like, everybody loved this tomato puree because it was cheaper than the alternatives. There was a ton of it. But then, for some reason, later that year, they also imported a GM soybean, and there was a huge backlash from from environmental groups and from the public, and all of a sudden, GMs were considered, like, bad things and kind of scary. A lot of people in the U.S. saw it as, like, a trade embargo kind of thing. Like, they don't want to trade with the U.S., so it became very political. Other people thought that Europeans weren't trusting scientists because in the mid-1990s, the scientists told everybody that humans couldn't get mad cow disease, and that was wrong. Oh, and
yeah, no, that's
so people stopped trusting science.
That's a good, I mean, well, I don't want to say that's a good reason to stop trusting science, because I am in global health and I definitely want people to trust science, but yeah, that'll do it.
Yeah, so there's a lot of, like, doubt, because all the scientists were like, no, it's perfectly safe, like, there's not, it's just, like, super fast, like, selective breeding.
Yeah. And,
yeah, but I think that got kind of lost among people, so now GMs are a social issue, they're, like, a doubting science thing, they're a political issue, and I think from there, everything's just kind of, I don't know, continued on. So some countries have developed policies that have mimicked Europe so that they can trade with them. I think the U.S. has been a little stubborn and is like, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to, what's it called? Like, we're going to do whatever we want.
As the U.S. does. As the U.S. does,
yeah.
So I think maybe real quick though, do we have personal stances on GMOs? Well, I just want to read the room for a bit, see where we're at.
My thought is that I think a lot of people look at genetic modification and they're like, oh, it's inherently bad because it's changing the, like, genetic makeup of something. But I think if you kind of think of it more as, like, a process, such as, like, surgery, like, there are ways to do surgery properly and there are ways to do surgery incorrectly. And with GMOs, all genetic modification is pretty much just gene splicing and replacing certain parts of DNA. And there are ways to do it incorrectly. Like, there was some bean or nut that got put, like, a Brazil nut gene got put into a different, I think it was soybean. And people who were allergic to Brazil nuts were, like, having allergic reactions to the soybean. And it's like,
oh, wow.
Yeah. And that's, like, kind of a point of, like, when you don't do it incorrectly, if you don't do proper testing, or if you don't, like, the process isn't developed enough for you to, like, be able to foresee those complications, it's like genetically modified organisms can be bad. But I think the process of genetic modification isn't inherently bad and could be very beneficial.
Yeah, because I see it more as of, like, it could be bad, like, in the sense that you described, that, like, the whole, like, Brazil nut in a soybean gene thing, but that I feel like is definitely more individualized and has to do with, like, allergies rather than, like, the inherent negative
badness
of of GMOs. But I guess I can hop in. I was actually raised in a very, like, non-GMO organic household, so, like, literally almost everything we bought, like, had to have the non-GMO label because my mom would, like, freak out. I'm exposing my mom right now, but it's true. But at the same time, I don't think that they're inherently bad. Like, I don't think that's right to say, because, like, for example, one of, like, the staple household fruits in my home are cotton candy grapes, and I don't know if you've ever heard of those or had those.
No.
But they're the grapes. Yeah. Delicious, absolutely so delicious fruit. But
they're so,
like,
weird.
Yeah, wait, what are
they're
they?
So small. They're, like, really small.
I don't know what
right?
they are.
No, so they're, like, regular grapes. They're, like, green grapes, like, green seedless grapes. And they essentially taste like cotton candy. Like,
they're
literally
really
exactly
sweet.
Like cotton
they're
candy.
Really
they're
weird.
Super sweet. And they are delicious. But like those
and they're grown that way, or they're
no, they're grown that way.
Oh, okay.
At least, like, from my knowledge, I mean, there's definitely probably
I don't know if this
ways.
Is, like, the one exception to your mom's, like, GMO rule. Like, everything else is bad, but cotton candy.
No, but
are
then
they
exactly.
GM food?
Hmm.
Are cotton candy grapes like a GM food?
I don't think they're like labeled as non-GMO, at least from my experience. But like when you think about it, it might
it's not like they can take the DNA
from cotton candy.
So what I've learned about like labeling and not labeling is that there are huge categories of food that aren't required to be labeled in like every single country. I think in the US, the FDA made like a list of the foods that don't need to be labeled like at all.
Mm-hmm.
So instances where GMOs do not have to be labeled include foods derived from animals, so like eggs, meat, milk, etc., anything animal produced, which seems very broad. Refined ingredients like oils and sugars, because canola is a huge GM food that's pretty much never going to be labeled as containing GMOs. Any food served in a restaurant, any food manufactured and sold by, quote, very small manufacturers, which also seems very broad and very easy to get around, and then any non-food products. And in other countries, too, it's like any soybeans, any things like that. Like, there are huge categories that just don't even need to be labeled.
Yeah. Going back to the grapes, like I don't think they're not going to get, or I think I've seen them with the non-GMO label, but when you think about it, it really is kind of genetically modified just because of like the crossbreeding that like exists between the grapes, like because you're not going to get like, obviously like Kayla said, like you cannot inject cotton candy DNA into a grape, but like,
but you keep selecting the ones that are sweeter. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that in a way, like at least in my mind, like I see that as some sort of genetic modification because you're not like sticking to like the genes of like that specific grape plant, however grapes grow. But like, so, but that's still a way of genetically modifying in my eyes, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, and when Kayla kind of introduced it, like she mentioned that like it kind of started off as like farmers kind of choosing certain plants to grow. And I think that's like a really important point because I think the main issue about genetic modification is like education to consumers about like what genetic modification is and like the health benefits or like negative side effects and stuff, because most of like the fruits and vegetables that we eat nowadays and the way that we know them are much different than what the plant originated as, like such as like peaches used to be like the size of a cherry and they weren't sweet. Eggplants used to be like yellow. Bananas looked nothing like bananas do today.
I have a little thing on bananas, that the bananas we like have now, I've like researched this extensively for some reason. It probably was like a little rabbit hole, but they are the original bananas in quotation marks, were called like the Cavendish banana, I'm pretty sure. They supposedly tasted nothing like ones? I am not
sure. Or am I thinking of something totally different?
Actually.
Were they more like plantains?
I think they were smaller, though. And they tasted, like, nothing like the bananas we have now. And, like, literally just because there was a banana, there was actually a banana, like, shortage or, like, a banana scare, I guess.
Yeah, we still have, that is still a fear. We are still scared of bananas because.
scared of bananas.
Well, scared
about that bananas. Genetic modification.
We're scared. Yeah, exactly. Well, because I don't know if you guys know this, but they apparently, I haven't done extensive banana research, so maybe Nicole, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I know that the, there's very limited genetic information in bananas right now because basically how banana growers are cultivating them is kind of through like not like cloning directly, but like similar cloning techniques. So like any disease that comes to attack a banana could attack all of the bananas. Yeah, Nicole,
no, exactly.
Is that where you're
exactly.
Go with this?
No, okay. Like I'm. It's all coming back to me.
Yeah, so
all my banana researches, but we're still scared of them. But no, exactly. So it's like you're still cloning. So like even if you label a banana as non-GMO, or if you say a banana is non-GMO or organic, which is its own thing, like non-GMO doesn't equal organic doesn't equal non-GMO. This comes from my Whole Foods experience, we were like indoctrinated with that information. We're like, don't tell people that organic equals non-GMO.
Which also doesn't equal pesticide use. Like, that's another thing. Yeah.
Just think there's such a fine line between, like, selective breeding and things like that that just seem fine in people's mind, because I think farmers have been doing that for all of human history.
Yeah, and it's like, genetic, it's something modification, that you think of.
Yeah, and I think the labeling of something as, like, a GMO food or a bio-whatever-engineered food makes it seem like such a bigger difference than the two things actually are. I think that's what makes it so scary in people's heads. Like, I think the most interesting thing that I read when I was looking this up was that, because I think it's definitely something to be cautious about, like, with the allergy to the Brazilian nut or whatever that was. Yeah. But at the same time, like, this paper that I read that was published in, like, 2003 said that Zambia, like, the country, was going through a massive countrywide starvation, and the EU tried to send genetically modified corn as, like, food aid, and they just, like, refused it. They're like, we're not gonna accept the donation, and like, the starvation continued because of, like, how afraid people are of the label GM, and that's really all it was.
Whereas, like, GMOs, exactly, like, I heard about that too, like, probably not that specific example, but, like, how GMOs actually might help, like, with world hunger and with starvation and everything, but, like, because people are so scared of them, it's like, well, okay, then world hunger versus consuming GMOs, like, pick your fighter, you know? And it's like, that's not the way it should be. But I also feel like it's because of, I don't know, when you think of GMOs, or when a lot of people might think of GMOs, maybe not us specifically, but they might just, like, picture this, like, mad scientist, like, injecting like genes from another food into another food, and, like,
it's
wow,
like, chemicals in your food, and it's gonna give you like weird mutations, and it's like, it's almost like a scary future movie.
I don't know if you guys read the, like, the paper for this week, the first one, the it's Chen and Erickson 2019, and in it they talk about I think it's which one. They go into a bunch of different, like, brands that promote, like, health food, and one of them, I think it's the like, the bean fields. They have, like, in their description, and I noted this when I was reading it, it was like, stay away from those fluorescent green potato chips. And I was like, that's such an interesting image. Like, that's what people can be thinking of if they're like, oh, really processed, maybe GMO. Like, they didn't say stay away from GMO specifically, but it was, like, stay away from, like, green fluorescent, like, snacks.
What do you mean by green fluorescent? Like, the chips themselves? Or, like...
So I think, genetic modification, I don't know if this is where, like, this brand was thinking, but one of, like, the cool things that I learned about when I was, like, doing whatever biology classes in genetic modification was that there are things that you can do with, like, a jellyfish gene to make fish fluoresce. So, like, you can, like, if you look up, you could see, ah, they took, like, this gene from the jellyfish and they put it in this goldfish, and now this goldfish lights up.
Yeah, I've seen glowing goldfish. So cool. I've seen those.
Yeah, so I think the connection there is spooky, like, mad scientists, like you guys were saying, like, oh, they've messed with these chips. There's something wrong with them. There's something, like, very, very bad, and, you know, kind of, like, using whatever, like, I don't want to say that this is, like, fear marketing on, you know, parents who are, you know, who are concerned for their, like, their children's health, but I do think that there
is
a certain level of fear in what I do get the other side of it, though. I get that there is concern, like, we don't know the long-term effects, but it's just, like, we don't know the long-term, like, I don't know, I don't want to, like, be a downer, we don't know the long-term effects of everything.
I think
that is, like, in the discourse, though, of kind of, like, new technology and, like, fear around it, it's almost like, oh, like, microwaves are going to give you radiation, and, like,
Wi-Fi.
This is going to give you Have you guys seen the movie, What Happened to Monday?
No. I have not.
So it's basically, like, it's kind of this narrative, actually, of there was, like, I think there was, like, a hunger issue, like, there was starvation in the country, and then politicians reacted to it by, like, I guess basically doing, like, genetically modifying the crops so that they produce, like, a ton, and kind of, like, solved the hunger issue, but then something in the food was, like, bad and like made created like a human mutation where everybody had like 10 kids, and then there was like a overpopulation issue which created more issues.
Great.
And it got very, and more hunger probably.
Yeah, basically. And it got very phenomenal, like, wacky dystopia, like crazy stuff. But that was like the very beginning, is they introduced mm-hmm. that. And I think that's like what runs through people's heads. It's like, oh, like the scientists inserted weird stuff into my food and we're gonna have like mutations and crazy stuff from it.
Yeah. But then also going back to the label, I remembered what I had to say about Hannah's point about what needs to be labeled and what doesn't need to be labeled just came back to me. Also, I don't know if this is true. I'm pretty sure it is, or like I've read about it, that it's actually very expensive to get something labeled as non-GMO or organic, especially organic. I've heard about organic, and I can honestly make a similar assumption when it comes to non-GMO. So it would kind of make sense for like the very small businesses that you mentioned before that like don't have that non-GMO label. It's because they're a very small business. They might not be able to afford it. So like that also kind of impacts their marketing and like their product sales, because if they have like a consumer base that's like, oh, non-GMO is the way to go. Oh, that's actually, that's funny. But so people might be turned off from that, because even if they are truly like a non-GMO product and they don't even like gene splice or I don't know, like GMO or produce things with GMO in any way, they still might kind of get like the negative side effects of that literally just because they can't have the label because they can't afford it. Even if something is like very pure and natural or whatever, like whatever that means, call back to naturalness.
Yeah. Other conversation.
Yeah, so that you could call it whatever, like you could call it natural, like it, and to mitigate not having that GMO label, you could call it natural, you could call it whatever, but what does that mean in that context? Maybe it is natural, but you know, for whatever you're looking for, maybe that doesn't like fit the bill. Like it's very unclear. I could go on a rant about labeling things that aren't labeled. I was reading like a separate thing this week that was about like food labels, and it was talking about how this is very off topic, but it was talking about energy bars, and it was talking about how you can label something as an energy bar if it has like a certain amount of calories in it or a certain amount of energy and joules that it will provide you. But the discussion was that if you have this energy bar, it has the same nutritional value as a candy bar.
Oh my God.
And like there's a difference in like maybe the energy bar has like a little bit more protein to get to that like joule whatever.
Like the threshold, yeah.
Yeah, the threshold. But as soon as they get to that threshold, they can call it an energy bar, and it has like a similar, if not like not the same, but like it has a very similar nutritional value to a candy bar. And
that
they
is
compared
crazy.
Like this energy bar, I don't remember what brand it was, but they compared it to like a Snickers.
Oh my God.
Honestly, when I was a kid, I used to go on these hiking trips, and my counselor, who would like lead us up the mountain wherever we were hiking, would bring us Snicker bars as like power snacks. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't surprise me at all. But it's so interesting because I feel like even knowing that they're the same and that they probably don't, you know, there's probably not much of a difference, I feel like if I was to walk into CVS right now and like look at an energy bar, I'd still think it was better than like a Snickers mm-hmm. bar.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and the energy bar itself might have that like GMO, like non-GMO, whatever, because it has that like healthy mindset labeling that it
like,
wants
oh,
you to believe
it's an energy bar.
Yeah. It has,
even knowing, even looking at the label, I still have that so ingrained in me that I would probably still go pick one up and buy one.
Exactly, and you'd feel better about yourself rather than like getting a candy bar. Even though you might feel like eating a candy bar, you'll be like, no, I'll be healthy today, and like I'll grab an energy bar that has the same like amount of sugar as
a
Snickers bar.
Chocolate.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and actually aspartame, which is like a fake sugar, is created from like genetically modified bacteria. So things that are like low sugar or like no sugar, but like are sweet, are usually like made with sugars like aspartame.
I mean, even like, I don't think Splenda is genetically modified, but I think even that has its own issues of like fake sugar, which is again, another whole separate thing.
We could have a whole other episode on fake
sugar. Oh yeah, definitely.
One thing I did want to mention kind of when we were talking about like people's perception of GMOs as just like evil scientists doing their thing. I think one thing that's kind of important about the discussion with GMOs is kind of really like emphasizing it as like a process, because processes are kind of neutral. Like there's no good or bad to it because it's just a way of doing things. Although I guess there are inherently bad processes. But it's kind of like, have you guys heard of designer babies?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, so that uses the same like CRISPR technology that like splices the genes.
So there was an episode on 60 Minutes, which is where I learned about it, where this woman had she had the BRCA gene in her family, and that's the gene that causes breast cancer specifically. And if you have it, you are I don't know what the percentage is, but you're much more likely to get breast cancer in your life. So what this woman decided to do, like she I think both of her grandparents had had breast, both of her grandmothers had had breast cancer, and I think her mother had breast cancer, and she was very concerned about having children that would also be predisposed to having breast cancer. So what she did was she went to this, like genetics clinic, and she wanted to have children. So she paid whatever amount of money, went to this genetics clinic, and they analyzed her genome of like some of her eggs, and they picked out like, oh, you know, this one has the BRCA gene, this one doesn't have the BRCA gene, this one doesn't have the BRCA gene, this one does. And they were able to kind of pick and choose what the genetics of their kid, which, you know, amazing, because she was able to eliminate the BRCA gene from her family lineage. Her family line will never have like breast cancer as a result of that gene, but that opens up a whole nother can of worms of like mm-hmm. eugenics, and Kat was saying, introducing about designer babies, like, oh, I want my kid to have blonde hair, or oh, I want my kid to like look like this, or I want them to have this whatever gene, I don't want them to be lactose intolerant, like, you know, the myriad of decisions.
Did she change other genes other than just the cancer gene, or did
As far as I know, what they did was they wanted not to have that gene. So of all of like the eggs that she had donated or whatever that she'd given to the genetic studies to be analyzed, they randomly picked one that didn't have the BRCA gene.
Okay.
And that's how they handled that. Like,
gotcha.
No. Yeah. As far as I remember from the episode, she had one randomly picked out, from the ones that didn't have the BRCA gene. I mean, worth noting that this process is insanely expensive. It was like several thousands of dollars.
But if
to do this,
if you use it as kind of like an analogy, like say her choosing those eggs is kind of like selective breeding, mm-hmm. and then the technology also allows that you actually like send in the CRISPR, and it goes and like cuts the DNA and replaces it. So you can like selectively choose, and you can also actually splice the genes. But that was kind of like an example to make the point that like genetic modification isn't always good, and it's not always bad. It's just kind of like a way of something.
Yeah, it's a means to an end. It's the motivation that's behind it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we can't just like inherently say that, oh, GMOs are bad. That's the takeaway of this. Like it's
could
just
be both.
To say that. Yeah. Because then
also think it's like a tool to use.
Yeah.
I was gonna say people did have some hot takes. Oh, sorry, this is my attempt to like do another cool transition into Kat's Kat's paper about cow's milk.
Yeah, so it was kind of a survey on the like public attitudes toward genetic modification in dairy cattle. And it was people were basically asked about two things. So the cattle can be genetically modified to not have horns, so they don't like ever grow horns, because dehorning is kind of like a common surgical procedure for dairy cows. And usually they don't like do pain modification or anything. They just kind of slice them off. and that's done because like the horns, I guess, can be like dangerous, or it can...
They'll hurt each other.
Yeah, hurt the farmers.
Probably. Yeah.
So genetically modifying the cattle to not have horns is kind of protecting both the producers and as well as the cattle themselves. And also there are ways to kind of genetically modify them so that they're less susceptible to certain diseases, which kind of saves the producer costs in like medicine. And so the people were kind of asked about like, how do you feel about GMs in general? And there were a lot of responses kind of like, genetic modification is wrong on all counts. It should never be done. I don't approve of genetic modification ever. But there was also kind of like people had more positive attitudes toward genetic modification when it was like for kind of the health and safety of the cattle, which I thought was really interesting. And one really interesting point was that someone said, if cattle are kept in healthy conditions, there would be no need for genetic modification for disease resistance. If they are carefully bred, raised, and taken care of, diseases would be infrequent. And kind of the thought I had to that was, obviously, yes, in an ideal world, like we would take care of, you know, our animals, and we would have ethical farming as well as sustainable farming. Mm-hmm. But because there's so much kind of food demand, especially within our country, and not enough land to produce that food, it's kind of like you have to sort of adapt to the way things are, and you have to do certain things to be able to keep up with that demand.
Yeah,
exactly. Like, we have to consider like all the factors, because like, even if we did, like, we don't have all that land to support like cattle, mm-hmm. and like to give them all the space, because then if we did, then people would have problems with that. And like, yeah. if we like made more room for cows in the world, like, yes, mm-hmm. ideally, but America is only this big, like the world is only as big as it is. And like, yeah, so I totally get what you mean. I get yeah. your point.
What I will add though, I think so I took this like environmental climate change class last semester. That feels like it was forever ago, but it was last semester. And one of the major things that we were talking about was like land use in America and like where that land use goes. And for, I don't know like what the exact like percentages of everything was, but like they had a, you know, a designated plot of land in America that was like, you know, a few states, medium-sized yeah. states. I don't know how to quantify the state size. There's a lot of different states. And like whatever that size was used for human like plant consumption. So, you know, in the discussion of GMOs, like you label things that are going to be consumed by humans, right? Because that's what we're going to be eating. But the vast majority of land for crops was not for humans. It was in fact for animals. And all of those crops have the potential to be genetically modified and could be genetically modified. And those would be, I think, hidden in the brush of the genetically modified like labels and stuff, because you're not selling those to people. You don't need to label them to people. You can sell them to like you use that to pay for the feed for the cows,
yep,
which exactly. works out because like you know, you get to get those benefits. You get to feed the cows better, and then it goes, the genetically modifiedness of it just goes away because it's in the cow, which is maybe or maybe not inherently genetically modified. I don't know what cows they're using, but like for the sake of argument, let's say no. And then people can be buying this meat that has been eating this genetically modified organism. So I think that that's, if you do have people out there who want to be purists about it, I don't know how they like modify that, or they, you know, they figure that out, because I feel like the majority of genetically modified organisms would not be for people, but would be for these animals.
No, exactly. So like, you can't avoid them. Like, even if yeah. you're trying to avoid GMOs, like there is literally no way, because even if you're eating meat that's like not genetically modified in quotation marks,
assuming you're eating meat.
Yeah. yeah. Mm-hmm. But even if you are, and even if you're like a big follower of that whole like non-GMO movement, like, you have no guarantee that like mm-hmm. the corn or whatever cows eat, I what do cows eat?
Grass-fed. But we talked about last week how that could be cows or something. I'm saying last week, like it. Like, yeah, we're not, like, there's not a huge break in these episodes being released.
but no, exactly. And it's like, you don't have the guarantee that they did not, that they weren't fed, like, GMO things. Mm-hmm. And even if, like, that would be kind of really unrealistic, I think, to think that, like, oh, these cows were fed non-GMO things. Like, usually those products, kind of like you mentioned, they're, like, the GMO crops that might be grown, like those are usually used for animals, so yeah. Like obviously, like, you wouldn't use the non-GMO to like sell those to people, you know, like,
yeah, the main ones I think I said I was like soy, corn,
yeah
and those are fed all to, primarily fed
to animals,
mm-hmm.
Exactly, so cows, you're not going to be giving fish. You're not going to be giving those non-GMO, like that non-GMO corn or that non-GMO soy to cows, like it, I don't know. Yeah. It's just like you can't avoid GMOs as much of an opponent as you could be. It's not gonna happen.
Right.
Like, I'm sorry, but it's not.
Yeah, unless I don't know. I'm sure there's some way if you are veganism, whatever.
Yeah,
avoiding meat that way. Yeah.
Than just avoiding the label on the packaging.
Yeah.
Exactly. I feel like the biggest like takeaway here for me is like, I mean, this is like everything we do in this class anyways. But like the label does not mean what you think it means. Like labels like this are just so loaded with like political forces, social forces, like history, years and years of this, and it's going to be different if you see it in the US or in the European Union or in Asia or wherever. Like, it probably doesn't mean what you think it means.
Exactly.
Yeah. Which is frustrating.
Yeah.
Because the time you're not going to know what you're eating.
Yeah, I was reading another article. I feel so bad because I read these articles, but I didn't think that I was going to talk about them today, so I didn't like write them down and like cite them or whatever. So this is probably bad on me. But there was this other article that I was reading for this in anticipation of this episode that was talking about how I don't know if they were like American based products being sold in China, but there they had a very strict policy about what the labels could and couldn't say, and they showed this label and it was like half the information on it was redacted because this couldn't be proven. So the label that was in English made absolutely no sense because it was like it redacted like natural and it redacted like whatever other like grass-fed or like whatever, I don't know what the specifics were, but it redacted at least half the information on the label, so the label in English was nonsensical because all of those modifiers were removed.
Wow. Interesting.
Another interesting thing about the GMO labels in the U.S., like, this is kind of a little different, but I read on, I think it was the FDA's website, that, so they released a new policy that was going to be, I think it started this year, and it's basically, like, by January 1st of 2022, all companies are going to be required to, like, start labeling more, because, like, the U.S. used to not have any, like, requirements to say that you have, like, that your food was GMO. But they're kind of changing it from GMO to bioengineered, and they released like a new little logo that you can put on your food to say that it's GMO, but it says like, it's like star bioengineer, and it's like sparkly and there's like a little picture of a farm on there. But I feel like people aren't going to know what bioengineered means. And it's almost like they're trying to get away from the negative connotation of like GMO.
GMOs. Yeah.
Cause like next year you might start seeing food pop up as bioengineered. And if you listen to our podcast, you're going to know what it means. It's just a fancy way of saying GMO.
That's why you should share your podcast. Share this podcast to all your friends.
Oh, yes, please. Please do.
Watch out for the bioengineered labels.
Yeah.
But kind of this actually provides like a really, I think, a really great transition, because we were talking about China and we were talking about how labels don't usually like, people don't usually know what labels actually mean. So I think I might... Well, not necessarily end this, but like kind of continue this on a positive note, rather than talking about GMO and non-GMO. I found this really interesting article about the fair trade label, which for those of you who don't know, it essentially like it symbolizes kind of like this fair trade between like producers and consumers, where the producers of a certain product are paid like a very fair wage, which also could be kind of debated, mm-hmm. but a relatively fair wage for the work that they the products that they give or that they produce. And so I found this article about like the effects of the fair trade logo and taste evaluation. So I guess this was a study done in 2015, I believe. Mm-hmm. It was done in China, actually, and it was basically about the taste of green tea and how people perceived how this specific green tea tasted, like based on whether they saw the fair trade label or not. So kind of speaking to what Hannah said before about how like people might misinterpret labels, a lot of participants that were originally like recruited for this study, they were first given a test as to if they could tell like the researchers what fair trade means. Like they were given like a multiple choice little mini exam. And a lot of them actually didn't pass because the proper definition of fair trade is what I described before, where like producers receive like an equal or like a fair pay for the products that they're making. And a lot of people actually just thought that it had to do with like the quality or standard of the product, like the quality of the product, which was kind of like interesting to me. But then also like makes sense in a way, just because like when you look at the fair trade label, it's like this green and blue little like rectangle with like this little person, I think. Let me look at this. with like this little person like with like their hand up, and it kind of like it could be lost in like the flurry of labels that we've seen. Like it honestly, like when you would look at it from like a distance, it would probably you could probably mix it up with the non-GMO label. And so since people automatically assume that non-GMO means good, or a lot of people do, they could also assume that like fair trade is also healthy, which isn't necessarily the case. But essentially, this study kind of looked at how people perceived or tended to perceive something with a fair trade label as better tasting. Well, actually, the participants of the study, only about 25% of participants. So actually, the whole basis of this study was that half of the group was given a green tea without the fair trade logo, the fair trade logo, and the other half was given a tea with the fair trade logo. They were the same exact tea. They were kind of like looking at which tea people thought tasted better. And originally when they were recruiting
was
for
it,
the study...
Was it the same people in both groups, or did they switch them up? Like, was it the same group of people, like, given A and then given B, or was it, like...
It was two separate groups, which is also another interesting thing. But they were kind of, like, given... they had to, like, rate the teas.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, before this study, a lot of people, or like based on previous research, it was kind of said, like I said before, that people assumed the quality of a product or the taste of a product was better when it came with like a social meaning, as in like fair trade.
Mm-hmm.
But they came to conclude that only about 25% of participants thought that the product tasted better. And 68 thought that they were identical. So that was kind of interesting. But yeah, there was a whole other like background to it, because they did the study in Chinese and in English. There were like two different conditions. So they actually also tested out the label they gave people a label with like fair trade in English and then also in Chinese. And it turned out that the English fair trade logo was like more like positively perceived, I guess, and people had more of like, wow, this is fair trade, this is good, like this is good quality, versus like the Chinese logo, which were like a lot of people didn't really pay attention to. They didn't have like a negative stance on it, but it was mm-hmm. just kind of like a
okay. Were participants English speakers?
No, they were they were English speakers as like their second language. Chinese was their first language. These were like university students in China. So
that's really interesting.
But yeah, so this not only kind of shows that, like, I guess people perceive like different labels as like inherently good or bad, not necessarily bad here, but like neutral, like superior and less superior. Mm-hmm. But also just like kind of factoring in the whole like language thing, that they think for some reason English is like, the English logo is superior and it makes it better.
That's a whole other podcast.
Which is kind of interesting.
That could, we could talk about that for a whole hour.
Yeah, what? Again, more.
Another episode.
A really long time.
But yeah, so that's my little spiel about how some logos aren't what they seem, and how
takeaway, nothing is what you think it is.
Different logos,
nothing is as it seems. Labels are lies.
Nothing is what you think it is. cue the Wizards of Waverly Place.
Can that be our outro?
Like, everything is not what it seems.
Can that be our outro? I didn't
watch it, but I remember the song. Yeah, that's our outro. I don't know. I think that there are copyright.
Imagine Wizards of Waverly.
Everyone
Place
can
right
just
now.
Play it in your head, listeners. Just listen to the. Pretend that you're hearing the song right now. Yeah, imagine it.
Yeah. The theme song, please.
Also, bananas are scary.
Bananas are scary. Yes. So we have that. That's it. We have our few takeaways from each episode. We have bananas are scary. Wizards of Waverly Place theme. Things are not what it seems. There we go.
That's it.
Yeah. So to kind of round out the episode, thank you all for coming and chatting with me today about genetically modified organisms. I think we had a really good discussion. And to kind of segue into, I think, what episode 3 is going to be, as far as I know, I think impossible meat is genetically modified. So that'll be it, because it has that the heme protein from beef in there to make it bleed for the soy things. I'm making this segue because next week we plan to talk about
bleed.
Impossible meat and fast food chains, which Nicole's gonna be taking the lead on. But yeah, they do make it bleed. They took the heme protein, like, which is in
like blood,
juicy,
like fake blood in quotation marks.
Blood in quotation marks. Yeah.
So we're inserting fake blood into food now.
So they have. From my understanding, the heme protein is something that is in blood, and it's what gives something a meaty taste. Because heme is something that it's just a protein in blood, you can genetically modify soy to produce the heme protein, which is what they did. Wow. And so they have. That's why it has that, like, if you look at impossible ads or, like, whatever, they're like, oh, look, it, like, bleeds, quote unquote, because it, like, leaks this heme protein when you squeeze it. And it has that, like, meaty taste, which is why it doesn't taste like, you know, you're eating soy, which I had an impossible burger for the first time, just to segue really shortly, at this vegan restaurant in D.C. Just shout out to Farewell. It's... on U Street, on the, like, west side somewhere. I don't know where.
Sponsor us.
Huh?
Sponsor us.
Sponsor us. Yeah, sponsor us, please. People who are in D.C., check it out. It's very good. All vegan restaurant. I highly recommend the soy fake chicken wings. They're delicious. Much better than, like, actual chicken wings I've ever had. Anyway, but I had their Impossible Burger because I was like, oh, I haven't tried this before. Let me try it. And I was actually very, very underwhelmed because I was like, oh, this just tastes like a burger. Like, I feel like I just ordered a burger.
Oh, wow.
And I was expecting it to be like, oh, my God, this is, like, tastes amazing. And it's so good. But I was like, oh, this, like, tastes like a burger, which is the amazing thing about it. But it was just very, very interesting.
But we will go into that next time.
Yeah, but yeah, Nicole, fast food, Impossible Burgers, genetically modified.
Get excited. Very excited.
All right.
Bleeding tofu.
Yeah, should be very fun. See you next time.